Welcome to the Wampa's Lair Podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl Eclair and Jason Hunt, discuss all things Star Wars. So join the conversation and hang out here in the Wampa's Lair. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 216, our top five rescue scenes. I'm, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, the Saw Gerrera to my agent, Callus, because we're both in that gray area from our respective sides, we have Carl Eclair.
I'd almost rather be Callus, because, you know, at least he's like helping the good side. Saw's like over the top extreme, but that's
you
okay.
Crazy.
I am a little bit crazy. That's true. I have been known to take a puff of oxygen every now and then from a tank. So, Jason, I'm doing well, buddy. I'm excited because it's been a while since we've done a top five list, which is some of my favorite type of episodes to do. And yes, this is something I've been thinking about doing for a while, but obviously we wanted to make sure to cover Rogue One really well, which I think we've done a pretty good job with, and that's certainly not to say that we're done. But today we want to talk about our top five rescue scenes. There are so many rescue scenes in the Star Wars franchise, so really excited to talk about some of our favorite ones today. And at the end of the episode, we are going to get back to a few of your Rogue One reactions, because we still have a few left from our Larian response episode to Rogue One. So don't worry, we are going to get to a couple more of those today. We probably still won't finish them, but definitely by the next episode, we'll be done with these. So, yes. But Jason, we decided to hit pause on the matchup for one more week because we just both kind of forgot to put it up on social media. So, which is fine. So, the matchup, which was, remind us,
a team matchup of Chirrut and Baze versus Pre Vizsla and Bo-Katan.
That's right. So, don't worry, we are going to definitely let you guys weigh in on that for our next episode. So, we'll be putting that up between now and then, so you will be able to respond to that. But, you know, without further ado, Jason, let's rescue some people.
Okay.
Because there are people in dire need of help. Their names are kitties.
Well, there's so many of them.
Oh, yeah. Well, my cat right now, he wants to be rescued from my tyranny of not letting him sleep in my bed all afternoon. Mm. So I run a tough ship, apparently. So he's been yelling at me all morning. He's like, let me in. Yeah, if you hear Embo in the background, it's because he's being a pain in my butt. He's literally just glaring at me right now. He's not pleased.
I can see him in the video, folks. Literally, he's just staring at Carl.
Yeah, he's not amused. But then again, few are amused by me. Self-deprecation. So, Jason,
well, I've got two.
Yeah, you've got two honorable mentions. I've only got one. So why don't you get this party started?
All right. Well, my first honorable mention, I decided I wanted to try and throw something in from the Clone Wars. And this may or may not be my favorite rescue from the Clone Wars. This is just the one that popped into my mind first. So we'll go with it. And it takes place, I think it's season four, where Hondo has to work with Ahsoka and the younglings to rescue everybody to escape General Grievous. And at the very end, he shows up in Slave One as Grievous is dueling Ahsoka in order to rescue Ahsoka and the younglings. I really like that whole arc and the fact that Hondo finally begrudgingly admits that he has a bit of a heart of gold and doesn't want to see the kids, you know, killed by Grievous and goes back to rescue them. I really like that. And I just like that arc in general. Period. So it's a great arc. It's a fun arc, and the fact that we get Hondo working with a bunch of Jedi kids and the banter between them during the whole sequence is fun. So I like that arc. I like that rescue scene. So that's why it's an honorable mention.
Nice. I honestly don't really remember that episode too well, so I can't really say much to it. But I will say this. I'm glad that you're going to be bringing in Clone Wars, potentially Rebels. All my stuff comes from the films, and that's not because I don't particularly like any of the rescue scenes from Clone Wars. It's just I don't have a very good Clone Wars knowledge still. It's not my strongest link, so I would have to like physically go back to look at things to remember some. So I don't have any on my list, but I'm confident that you'll at least have a couple.
That's the only one. The rest of them are from the film. So, okay. But I wanted to give at least a shout out to.
Yes, I appreciate that because I, like I said, I don't have any. And again, there's probably several, but then again, when I think of rescue scenes, these are the ones that come to mind anyway. So they're probably going to take the top of my list. So let me give you my first honorable mention, which comes from Return of the Jedi, and it's when Leia rescues Han from Carbonite. I really like the scene, not just because there's a mounted Tauntaun on the wall, which, by the way, I never knew that for so long. I think I noticed that for the first time like 5 or 6 years ago as they're, you know, as she's walking down and, you know, oh, there's this mounted Tauntaun on the wall. How cool is that? I'd like a mounted Wampa, to be honest, but that's okay.
Right.
I really like this scene because... One, it's kind of this kind of dark, mysterious scene. You know, again, if you're watching Return of the Jedi for the first time ever, which is probably none of us, we don't know who this is approaching Han, right? So there is that sense of mystery, and the music is kind of dark too. So it's like, what is this person up to, right? We don't know what their intention is, but at least their initial intention is to thaw him out. And that CGI is incredible for something that was done in 1983. That looks awesome still today, you know? Here's a weird story, but I like telling things like this. When I was younger, I used to like to pretend that I was thawing out from carbonite when I'd be in like the shower. So I'd like come in from like a cold winter day playing, and I would stand in the shower and just slowly start moving my hand like Han, like that one shower, you know, zooms in on his hand and he's like slowly like, you know, moving,
flexing his fingers.
So I used to do that in the shower. I'm a weird dude. Do
you have a Han and carbonite shower curtain? Is that?
Yeah, I do. That's right. I do. So still now to this day, sometimes I like to stand behind it in the shower and put my hands into his. I'm like, oh, I'm so clever. It's like that early vintage Han and carbonite figure, which was literally like that plastic bed that you put the Han figure. And then there was like a piece of felt you pushed into it.
That's
so
funny.
That made the indentation. There we go.
Indentation. There you go.
But I just really like the scene, and even, you know, once it is revealed that it's Leia, you know, who are you? Someone who loves you. Like that's Star Wars dialogue right there.
Yes, that's cheesy romantic Star Wars dialogue, and you know, it's not going to win any Oscars, but it's wins our hearts.
It does, but I like it as well because, in a way, I would say Leia herself is somewhat frozen with Han, right? Like this is her. This is her significant other. This is somebody that she has tremendous feeling for. So in a way, Leia herself, in order for her to be unfrozen, for her to be freed and continue her story, she has to rescue Han. Like that's part of what she feels she has to do. And I think you could say the same is true for Luke, Chewie, and Lando as well, right? Like Han's fate right now hangs in their hands. And in order for our story to move forward, they have to free Han. So it's kind of a significant moment for the story as well. So it's like, it's our story is frozen with Han, and like literally if you, and again, neither of us did, but if you grew up in the time period when these films came out, you yourself as a fan you were probably frozen in time for 3 years wanting to know what's going to happen. And that's why it's the first thing that really needs to happen in Return of the Jedi. So our story can now progress.
Exactly.
Han's the first thing that has to happen. So that's my honorable mention. I said way too much for an honorable mention. So, all right, get out of the shower.
That's
Carl.
All right. I'll go ahead and put in my final honorable mention here. Honorable mention. And I'm going to take us to Attack of the Clones.
Yay!
And this is Yoda versus Dooku. Dooku's just dispatched Anakin and Obi-Wan. We don't know what his plans are, if he's just going to try and leave them there, or if he's going to finish them off. And then all of a sudden, we hear, tick, tick, eh, eh. And Yoda walks around the corner with his cane, and we get, you know, the either much beloved or much maligned, there's not much in between these days, scene where Yoda... basically kicks Dooku's butt, both with the Force and with his lightsaber. Of course, I love this scene, and I cannot not put it on my list somewhere. And so, yeah, Yoda rescuing Anakin and Obi-Wan by taking on Dooku. I still get very excited when we have that shot of Yoda taking his lightsaber out with the Force and igniting it. I'm just like, yes! So,
but much to learn. You still have.
It is obvious this contest cannot be decided by our knowledge of the Force, but by our skills with a lightsaber.
That is a cool salute that Dooku then does. Yeah, the choir builds.
Right, and then...
I would venture that...
Sorry.
Yeah, his, anyway. His Kermit the Frog shout.
War cry.
War cry. I would argue that almost anybody who saw that for the first time got amped up for that.
Oh, yeah. But so nowadays...
Things have mellowed over the years, some people, yes, like you said, have kind of, you know, not really cared for this particular moment. I love that particular scene you're talking about for sure. When he does come in and come to the rescue... Actually, surprisingly, I am kind of in the middle ground. I don't love or hate that scene. I'm fine now with the fact that Yoda fights. You know, for a while there, I was like, well, I think it's stupid that Yoda fights. You know, that's not the Empire Strikes Back Yoda. Well, that's on purpose. He's not supposed to be the Empire Strikes Back Yoda at this point. Yes. He's yet to
he
be humble.
He grows.
Right.
He grows into who we see in the Empire Strikes Back.
Right. I think my only issue with it now is just it just doesn't look good to me, to be honest. If you watch it closely, like half the time when Dooku's striking, he's hitting it like air because like it's not really well put together, in my opinion. And that's, again, not to hate on it. It is what it is. I don't love nor hate it, but I do love when he walks in. That is really cool. Master Yoda, Count
Dooku.
Like, that's so cool. You know, again, just like that building tension. It's definitely amazing. That's so that's a really fun scene. And whether you like the duel itself or not is inconsequential. I think even just the build up to the duel is extremely epic.
Yeah, it is. All right. I guess we're moving into number five.
Number five. My number five comes from A New Hope, and it's Han's unexpected re-entrance at the Battle of Yavin. And when I say re-entrance, I mean entrance. He was never there. So, you know, this is an extremely unexpected event. You know, Luke is on, you know, he's almost to the thermal exhaust port that Galen Erso put in. And, you know, Vader is, I have you now. And then, woohoo, you know, here comes Han. And it is really what? Like, what? What? Wouldn't it be great if he goes, what? And then Han goes, it's me. La, 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 la.
What? Just send shivers down Annie's nightmare train. I don't know what. Okay, just continue.
I don't know what universe you're from, but that's gotta hurt.
Right.
But yeah, no, when Han comes in and saves the day, It's just this really great moment. It's really cool the way it's shot too. When you see the Falcon flying at you and it's kind of eclipsing the sun and the sun's kind of silhouetting it. Like, here comes the light, right? You know, here comes the rescuer. Because if Han hadn't shown up, Luke would have been dead, and so would have all the rebels. because that Death Star was clear to fire. You may fire when ready. but yeah, no, I really enjoy this scene. It's kind of the point of Han's transformation in this story as well. You know, all through that movie, it's very clear that he's Han Solo, right? He does things on his own. He's only out for himself. And here he comes to save the day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it is this character transformation point for Han where he finds a bigger purpose in his life. And he finds that through Luke and Leia. I would still not even argue the Rebel Alliance particularly. I think he's just more of, you know, again, I think Chewie convinces him, you know, of like the type of kid Luke is, and that, you know, that he deserves a second shot and like a chance. So Han decides to go back and you know, saves the day in the nick of time. And, you know, and again, this is why I think I've heard a lot of good arguments as to why, you know, doing this Han Solo movie is not such a great idea, because it takes away a moment like this from Han Solo, right? All we need to know about Han Solo in A New Hope is that he's a jerk and he's self-involved. You know, we don't need to know where he came from, you know, because his transformation and his character development happens most significantly in A New Hope and then Empire. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But that's my number five.
All right. Well, and I'll retain judgment on whether or not the Han Solo movie is needed or not when I know what the story is about.
You know, I know I'm going to love it. So I got to be careful what I say now, because I'm sure it'll be a good movie. I'll come out of it and be like, this is the most best thing ever.
It's amazing. Hey,
Carl, why don't you listen to any of your comments prior to episode 200 in the Wampa's Lair? You hypocritical jerk.
So. Oh, man. That being said, it's a great scene. It did not make my list. Honestly, some of these like rescue moments, I skipped my mind. Must have slipped my mind. I had considered that one, but I decided that scene for me is more about Luke than Han's coming in. So that's why I didn't make my list. Mm-hmm. But I love that moment. So my number five, though, is also from A New Hope, and it's the
I just realized your entire list could be R2-D2 moments. I just realized this, but anyway.
Well, he's involved with several of them.
I wouldn't be surprised. Okay, sorry.
But not number five. So okay. Number five, what I put down here is, this is some rescue.
Nice.
It's the Cell Bay shootout, basically, where Han and Luke go and rescue Leia, and of course the rescue does not go according to plan. I've always liked that sequence. It's my favorite part of the Death Star sequence, that the Cell Bay shootout, you know, once that they dive down into the trash compactor, I'm like, meh. But it's my favorite part of the Death Star sequence is that Cell Bay shootout and the banter between our three heroes there. It's a shorter rescue scene. I like it. There's not much else to it other than it's almost like the original Star Wars rescue scene. from the moment we get, you know, where are you taking this thing? And, boring conversation anyway. Luke, we're going to have company. Aren't you a little short for a stormtrooper? And then, you know, all that stuff. I just like that sequence. There's not much else to it than I just like it. So,
yeah, you're right. That is like the iconic rescue scene in Star Wars. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's what a lot of minds would go to when you think of, oh, a rescue scene in Star Wars. It's the Cell Bay. And I'm with you, Jason. The stuff on the Death Star, I'm not crazy about. But I do enjoy this. I do enjoy the shootout in the Cell Bay. But once they go down to the trash compactor, from then until basically they leave the Death Star, I'm just kind of like, meh. You know, it's not like I dislike it, but it's just, you know, it's not super exciting to me. Now, I know it was to a 1977 audience. I think the one thing that would stand out, it's not on my list, but the one thing that definitely stands out, though, is, you know, that Leia is not, though, the everyday fairy tale damsel in distress, right? Mm-hmm. She takes Luke's gun. Someone's got to save our skins. You know, so again, it's like that's a testament to Leia's character that she certainly needs a rescuer. She's not getting out of that cell, but she is not somebody who's desperately in need of others either, right? She is very good at taking command even then. So I kind of like that because it's not that black and white, you know, role of like, oh, the princess is in need and the knights need to save her. Well, nope, she needs to save them because they're kind of dingbats, you know, right here. Like they've just walked them into a dead end, you know. Perhaps you'll get back in your cell, Your Highness. There is a lot of like witty little banter there where we get a sense of, you know, Han is just kind of rush right into things, which we'll see a little later. Luke is just the naive one who rushes in and, you know, wants to save the day without thinking a plan through. And then Leia's like, great, thanks for rescuing me, but
didn't you have a way of getting out before you rescued
I don't remember
me?
That line either.
He's the brains, sweetheart. Yeah. Well, I didn't know.
Well, I didn't know. Oh, man. Man, we need Fode and B to just like be commentators on all the Star Wars scenes, you know. Well, he didn't know.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, that's it. That is color.
We need a Fode and B commentary.
Oh my god, yeah, we do.
Oh man.
Alrighty. So I'm gonna move on to my number four. And this one comes from Revenge of the Sith. And it's when Anakin and Obi-Wan go to rescue, dink dink, to use your sound, the Chancellor from Count Dooku and General Grievous. And what's so interesting about that particular dink dink rescue scene, in case you don't know what dink dink means, that's Jason's air quotes. That's what he does when he does air quotes, since nobody can obviously see it's an audio podcast.
Which, of course, I stole from Steve Glosson. So.
Oh, okay. Which he stole from me. So I'm just kidding. That's not true at all. But no, this rescue scene where Anakin and Obi-Wan, you know, are going to rescue the Chancellor. What's so interesting is that we know it's a staged event. You know, this is, yes, it's to Anakin and Obi-Wan, it's a rescue moment. But for Palpatine, it's not that at all. It's a testing moment. But it's so far as the rescuing goes, I really like the way it starts, you know, with when Dooku shows up and Obi-Wan turns to Anakin, this time we'll do it together. I was about to say that. You know, I really like this because, you know, again, when Revenge of the Sith first came out and we didn't have the Clone Wars series where basically they fight Count Dooku like every other episode. You know, we're coming with the knowledge of like they haven't seen Dooku in 3 years. They haven't fought him since then. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's an immediate quip to what Anakin did last time these three met. You know, but so it's really nice to see them working together. And you get that great line, you know, get help. You're no match for him. He's a Sith Lord.
Chancellor Palpatine, Sith Lords are our specialty.
Obi-Wan is like, he's not quite cocky, which is what's cool. Like, that's not quite cocky, but he's confident.
He's very confident, and he doesn't mind, you know, talking a little bit down to the Chancellor.
Yeah. So, and what's so big about this rescue scene is there's tremendous stakes for Anakin specifically. Mm-hmm. You know, this for Anakin himself, the stakes are Palpatine is his friend and his mentor figure. You know, he wants to rescue him. You know, I think Anakin feels a tremendous amount of personal investment into this mission. Like, I have to do this. It's another, in a way, I can't let what happened to my mother happen to Palpatine, right? Like, I can't let somebody take someone I care about away from me. So Anakin is certainly really geared up to make sure this happens. And Palpatine knows that, right? Like, Palpatine uses that to his advantage and knows that, you know, Anakin's going to be coming at this, you know, fully cocked. And all I've got to do is just put a little finger on the trigger and he'll explode. And that's exactly right. What happens, you know, and right after he cuts off Dooku's head, he says, remember what you told me about your mother and the sand people? I mean, Anakin gave him that fuel and Palpatine uses it here. So again, while it is a rescue scene, there's a lot more going on.
Oh yeah. It's a testing for Anakin's soul and he doesn't quite fail and he doesn't quite pass either, you know?
Yep. And what's interesting to me is that in this rescue scene, Anakin frees, dink, dink, Palpatine, but to a certain degree becomes enslaved, dink, dink, to Palpatine. You know?
Yes.
So by freeing him, he's also got this dirty secret on Anakin now, too. Because Anakin's not going to want anybody to know that he killed Dooku in cold blood.
Right.
So, you know, it's a freeing moment for Sidious and an enslaving moment for Anakin. So
exactly. And really, you know, Anakin wouldn't have done that if Obi-Wan had been conscious.
Exactly. You're right. So
what's great scene.
Yeah. What's your number four?
My number four takes us back to Return of the Jedi. And I'm just going to say the Sarlacc pit battle. I'm not going to come out. I'm going to come out and say it. The Sarlacc pit battle where Luke, with the help of R2-D2, rescues everybody, puts into effect the rescue mission, and everything goes down. I love this sequence because it's when we first really get to see what kind of a Jedi Luke has become.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he's trusted R2 with his lightsaber this entire time. And R2 knows exactly when to launch it. But no, it really is a testament to Luke's Jedi abilities, how far he's grown, where he's come from, and the fact that You know, while there had been a setback in this rescue operation of Han, the rest of the team knew to, you know, keep their heads down, wait it out, and when the moment was right, they'd all, you know, launch into this attack. And it really is one of the great scenes where we have all three, you know, the big three, Chewie, Lando, R2, and 3PO all working together to get out of a situation. And, you know, we get a little bit more of that on Endor, but, you know, Lando's not there anymore. But, we get – this is the only time we get all of these characters together in a rescue sequence or an action sequence. And it's really fun to watch. Mm. So yeah. Not only that, but the music is awesome. You know, the trumpet stabs and everything before things really kick off.
Right. So yeah. Well, one of the coolest scenes ever with Luke's salute and – R2 shooting his lightsaber, yep. You know, which of course they brought back into the Clone Wars.
Yes.
The episode on Zygeria. That's so cool. Yes. In the arena there. But that's a great scene. It's not on my list, but it's certainly right up there because, you know, there's lots of rescuing going on in the first act of Return of the Jedi, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Which obviously I touched on Leia's with Han specifically. And now you've got Luke basically saving everyone, but Leia's part of it too. Again, like kind of like your previous one, like Leia isn't, even though she's literally in chained up and enslaved, she's still not helpless, which is what's just so great about her character. And what a testament, you know, and that is a Carrie Fisher type of role, you know, as we continue to remember her. That's a great one, Jason. And you're right. Like it's the first time when the whole team is working together. It shows what they're capable of. I mean, essentially, Han, Luke, Leia, Lando, and Chewie, with a little bit of help of R2, you know, five people and a droid essentially take down the biggest crime lord and his huge army of gang, you know, on their own.
Right.
Like, look out, Empire, right? Like, this is just the scrimmage. They're ready for for the real deal type of a thing.
So. Exactly, exactly.
Awesome. So
I love it. It's a great scene.
It is. Definitely is.
All right. Number three, right?
Yes, number three. I'm going to take us to the underbelly of Cloud City in The Empire Strikes Back. And it's the moment when Leia comes back to rescue Luke. I love this moment. This was actually the first one that popped into my head when I even thought of this idea. And the reason it popped in my head is like, wow, there's so many like great scenes in Star Wars we still haven't talked about, even though we've done over 200 episodes for 5 years. There's still so many great things we really haven't specifically talked about. And this was one of those moments I thought of. So I was like, well, let's build a topic around this. And it's funny because it's not my number one, but it's certainly up there. And I love this moment because what's so ironic is Luke came there to rescue them. He fails. They need to rescue him.
Right.
So it's this really like ironic scene, and what's cool too is this is the first scene where we see Leia use the Force. I wouldn't say that she uses it. Almost like Chirrut, she's open to it, right? Like it touches her. She's not really seeking it, but it finds her via Luke. It's this really great moment where Luke is hanging on the underbelly of Cloud City, absolutely defeated physically and mentally. And, you know, I mean, he threw himself down that shaft, probably assuming he'd die. You know, I mean, he rejects Vader's offer and throws himself. He'd rather die than join the dark side, which is obviously a telling moment for Luke. But since he doesn't end up dying immediately, he figures, you know what? Leia's still out there. And he calls on her and she hears it. So it's really cool because for Leia's character, it shows us that she obviously has an aptitude for the Force. And even more, there's some sort of intrinsic bond between Luke and Leia, which of course we then find out is their siblings. It's really great that, you know, I love when Leia's like, Luke, you know, Chewie, turn the ship around, you know, and Lando starts to protest and Chewie just like roars. And Chewie, if you watch it, he kind of raises a hand like he's ready to punch Lando. It's really funny.
It is.
And he's like, all right, all right, all right.
all right.
But it's this great moment where they're willing to go back into hell. Again, Cloud City is very much like, you know, this hellish place. You know, we continued into the pits of Cloud City and realized it's not heaven, it's hell. But Leia and Chewie are willing to go back into hell to save their friend. And you have to imagine, too, that both Leia and Chewie must be feeling a tremendous amount of guilt for what happened to Han and not rescuing Han. So for them, this is at least an opportunity to do something good, right? Like, we failed with Han, but we're not going to fail Luke.
Yeah, it's a little bit of redemption.
Exactly.
And I love this moment, particularly because it shows the connection that Luke and Leia have. And we really, you know, well, yes, there's a banter, there's sort of a, you know, friendship, and we get the big smooch at the beginning of this movie that Leia, you know, wants to make Han feel jealous over. And you get the idea that they're friends. This really starts to showcase that there's something deeper mm-hmm. with these two characters. And I love the payoff with it, you know, that yes, they are related. They're brother and sister and all that fun stuff. So I like that scene primarily because of the connection point between Leia and Chewie. But you're right. You know, they're feeling extremely guilty about not rescuing Han. And so this, you know, a bit of a redemption, a bit of, you know, of a way to, what's the word I'm looking for? To prove to themselves that they can still accomplish some good.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, this is just one of those moments that I absolutely love in The Empire Strikes Back. And again, it's one of those moments that we've just never had the opportunity to talk about. And it's a really good one. You know, there's watching Lando go up to, you know, pull Luke off. You know, there's that great deleted scene. You can see the pictures of Luke laying on the hull of the Falcon when he drops down and Lando crawls out to get him. Obviously, it's a cut scene. But you know, as these TIE fighters are approaching, I mean, it's really like high intensity too, and anxiety, you know, like, oh my gosh, hurry up, you know, and mm-hmm. the Empire's on them immediately. Yeah, it's a great scene where they do. This is because think about it, in The Empire Strikes Back, up to Luke's defeat by Vader, it's been nothing but defeat after defeat. Well, I guess you could slip this in. I mean, this is not on my list. I'm sure it's not on yours either. But the brief little rescue scene with Lando and Lobot and the guards, you know, where they do free Leia and Chewie.
It's a bit more of an escape than a rescue.
Exactly. And, you know, that this whole movie up to this point has been, you know, kind of failing, like surviving, but failing. And this is that at least one moment where it's like, yes, we did something good. Like, we rescued our friend and, you know, they can get away with some sense of victory.
Mm-hmm.
So there is my number three.
All right. Let's go to mine.
Yeah, let's go to yours.
I really like this one because it's from the newest Star Wars movie ever.
Oh, wow.
It's from Rogue One. And the quote I've got here is, "Let them pass in peace."
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad that's not, because I was racking my head. I really wanted to get a Rogue One in here just to talk Rogue One. I was like, nobody really rescues anybody because they just ultimately all die.
But you are
100% right. So sorry, continue.
Yes, Chirrut rescuing Cassian and Jyn. I love this scene. I mean, we saw most of this scene in the trailers, but it's still a great sequence. And then, of course, it ends with you know, Baze showing up as well and rescuing Chirrut. But it's a great little sequence because not only is it a rescue scene, but it really gives us a proper introduction, if you will, to who Chirrut and Baze are. I mean, we met them briefly in the streets of Jeddah, you know, but Cassian kind of dismisses them. But we get this proper introduction, see what they're really capable of. And it's a great sequence because Chirrut's blind and takes a whole squad of stormtroopers out with nothing but a stick.
Yeah. I'm throwing this out in the background just because Baze and Chirrut, they're the guardians of the wills.
Exactly. So, but yeah, I love this scene. It's a great little sequence. It, you know, it's all of, you know, 30 seconds from start to finish, but I love it. So, and I love Chirrut and Baze, so I had to have them in here somewhere.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that in, because I, like I said, I was honestly trying so hard to come up with something from Rogue One. Totally forgot this, and this is such a great scene. Let them pass in peace.
Let them pass in peace. So you stop right there.
Is he blind? Is he deaf?
He's blind. Is he deaf?
I like that, though. I like that there's a stormtrooper that's kind of like sassy.
Right. He's blind.
Is he deaf? Yeah.
But I will say then that that following shot is the least Star Wars shot ever, and it's not like knocking it. It's just show something about Chirrut. But right where it zooms in on his ear, and then the stormtrooper like grinding his boot into the dirt, and then his fingers tightening on the trigger, like mm-hmm. that is such a Donnie Yen movie scene, not a Star Wars movie scene.
Well, but you kind of have to do that so that you realize absolutely how yep. he's able to do all this.
Exactly.
So,
yeah, I'm not knocking it, but again, it's very jarring for a Star Wars scene. Is all I'm saying. Like,
right, I get that, but you know
it
zooms into his awareness.
Yes, I guess. Exactly. But yeah, no, that is an awesome scene, and that is how we are really introduced to Chirrut and Baze. Mm-hmm. And we get to see Chirrut just like totally house some stormtroopers with that, you know, with his staff of Ra, you know, and
is your foot all right?
And oh man, when he's like whacking them in the helmets and you see their lenses like explode, like you see the amount of force he's hitting with them with, right? Because if you think about it, well, like, why is somebody hitting them with a stick and all that armor hurting? Well, you see why. Like, there is a tremendous amount of force behind those blows.
Oh, he's chipping off bits of their armor. You know, the lenses yeah. are cracking and coming out. And it's brutal.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's a kyber crystal in the tip there. So I'm exactly. sure that doesn't,
yeah.
You know, doesn't hurt.
Right.
Either,
so good. And then, you know, he houses all of them. And then here comes a bunch more. And then they're all down.
Down.
You know, you almost shot me.
You're welcome.
Yeah, such a good scene. And, you know, I was right. The Force did protect me.
I protected you.
But, you know, that becomes their story. Like, the Force protects Chirrut via Baze. You know?
Right. Right.
Baze is still a conduit of the Force. So it's so,
even
yeah.
even though he's, you know, not actively seeking it. So.
Right, right. It's still with him, you mm-hmm. know. And yeah, oh man, I'm so glad you brought that in, because that is such a great scene.
Yes,
man alive. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, number two.
My number two is from Attack of the Clones, and mm-hmm. it is when Yoda and the clones show up.
Nice.
Absolutely. I mean, that was the first time in a theater where I ever felt like jumping out of my seat, like, yeah, and like fist pumping the air. It was the first time in a movie experience where that ever happened for me. And I still get that feeling when I'm watching that scene where, you know, there's that great shot of them just surrounded by thousands of battle droids in this small ring of survivors. You know, I'm sorry, old friend, you know, and they all raise their guns again. And then look,
look, look.
And a
dun, 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 dun. Sorry, the music cue.
Thank you. But again, it's kind of a similar shot to when the Falcon shows up in the end of episode 4. Again, mm-hmm. it's like this cruiser eclipsing the sun. Again, like that great use of that visual of, you know, here comes the light, you know,
right.
to rescue our heroes. And this is one of those moments, like we were talking before we recorded, Jason, I don't have much to say beyond, it's just awesome to me. Like, I really, really right. enjoy it. And, you know,
around the survivors, a perimeter create.
It's the most, I love that line because it's the most awkward thing Yoda ever says, period. It's amazing. Yeah. The awkwardness of that sentence is so incredible. And I love it.
Yeah. I mean, if you've ever seen the Robot Chicken Star Wars, they have that scene, and one of the clone troopers kneels down and goes, all right, listen, we know what you're saying, but if you could just speak normal in the midst of a battle, it would really be helpful. Like, he says something along those lines. Yeah, I really love that scene, and the music really picks up there too. It's really fun music. And as these, you know, I love the, oh my gosh, I can't remember the name of the cruisers. What are those called?
Oh, the gunships.
The gunships, yeah. I love the design of the gunships. I love the clone troopers that sit in those little bubble cockpits. You know, it's something straight out of a World War II bomber. Exactly. Like it's so cool. Oh, yeah. Like how much these are influenced by World War II aircraft. And they come in with those like literally almost like ray guns. They're not shooting blasters. They're shooting like these little, I call them little Death Star rays.
Exactly.
You know, and they're just like decapitating droids, and they're literally clearing a path. And then these gunships set down, and you know, it's just these clones hop out, and we see the might of the clone army. You know, when they show up, it's like battle droids beware.
It's a great introduction for the clones in action. I mean, we've seen the clones, you know, on Kamino, but this is a great, you know, introduction to them as an army, you know, as a fighting force. And I love it.
Yeah.
I will have more to say on that scene later.
Okay. Well, what is your number two then?
Oh, my number two goes to Force Awakens, actually.
Okay.
And it's the Resistance.
All right. Yep. Okay.
And I love this scene, you know, where Poe and...
May I for a moment?
Sure.
All right, 1 second.
We have incoming at 28.6. Move!
It's the Resistance.
These thugs scare you.
Copy that.
We're with you, Poe.
Sorry, I had that queued up because it's my number one. So it sounds like our two and ones just swapped.
Kind of. It really does. Oh, my gosh. But I love this scene. I don't have much to say. I almost just want to just leave it at that sound clip because it's awesome. But,
sorry if I like blew your ears out. Hopefully I didn't blast that too much.
I don't care. It's a great scene. And, you know, of course, it's the Resistance. And we get the awesome shot of the X-Wing skimming over the lake.
Mm-hmm. And then, the first, of course, statement of the March of the Resistance.
Yes, which is my favorite track from the Force Awakens soundtrack. No offense to Rey's theme. I just love the March of the Resistance. And then, of course, we get the that's one hell of a pilot sequence where Poe just does that long sequence where he just takes out, like, you know, eight TIE fighters and some stormtroopers. Or is it 12?
It's 10, I believe.
10? I don't remember. Yeah. It's a lot.
Yeah.
It is
a lot at the end of the day.
I haven't counted it in a while. So. But yeah. It's so great, I love it. I don't have really anything else to say, so I'll let you talk about it since it's your number one.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, I don't have much to say either. You know, it's just similar to my number two. It's, you know, again, in Force Awakens certainly has a few of those moments where you want to stand up and fist pump, you know. And this is one of the most epic of them all in all of Star Wars. And, you know, like you said, it's that great shot of them swooping over this water and, you know, the March of the Resistance theme in all of its glory in this particular scene is just so perfect. And that immediate shot of, like, you know, we do see that Poe survived, which it's like, yay. And, you know, go straight at him. You know, don't be afraid of these thugs. Like, it's so great. Like, this small resistance band is not at all in any way intimidated by this much larger First Order force.
Right.
I don't have much to go, like, really deep into it. I really like it. And, you know, I think Han is genuinely kind of surprised, though, the way he's, and I love that, you know, it's the Resistance. You know, I don't think Finn has a clue what the hell's going on.
Right.
But, like, Han immediately knows who it is. And I think he's kind of shocked. And
great. Leia's rescuing me again. I'll never let this down.
I think it's relief. You know, that's what I hear in his voice and see on his face is he's relieved because he doesn't want to be captured here. He's probably heard of the extremism of the First Order. You know, here they come. And I think there is, like, this sense of relief to him. And with that music, we also know, like, oh, yeah, they're going to kick some ass right now. And that's exactly that's exactly what they do. I don't really have much more to say other than that. But, you know, it's this great moment. And, of course, it's... it's the moment too where all of our characters are, well, not all because Rey's taken away, but you know, Han and Leia are reunited, and our overarching Star Wars saga story gets to this like major pinnacle moment where Han and Leia come back together, and Han is now officially throwing his lot back in with the rebellion, with the resistance, with the Republic, whatever you want to say, right? He's been away from it for a while now, just trying to run away from the pain and guilt he feels over, you know, Ben's, you know, falling to the dark side, and this brings him back. So that's why, even I guess character wise, I really like it too. It brings Han back into the fold. Hey, how funny, my list is bookended by Han Solo moments. But yeah, so not much more to say, but let's talk about your number one.
All right. Well, I'm going to take your number two and back it up a couple minutes. I'm going to start it off with this party's over. I mean, I'm going to go all the way through Yoda showing up. Everybody knows how much I love the Geonosis Arena sequence. This should come as no surprise. But honestly, it's one of my fist pump moments in the entire saga. One of my most pumped up fist pump moments in the entire saga is, this party's over, and then all the Jedi start showing up, and it's just like, yes, because they're my people. What can I say? And then we get the whole arena battle sequence, which is Jedi versus droids, and that's my cup of tea, and I love it. So I don't have much else to say about it, but I'm, you know, your number two with, you know, Yoda flying in at the end with the clones and everybody getting out of the arena, is a great, you know, button to put on the end of that sequence that started earlier. And if you wanted to, you could even extend it to the beginning of the arena battle with the monsters and, oh, we decided to come and rescue you. Good job, you know. But if I'm just watching, you know, specific scenes from the movie, I start it at this party's over. I skip the creature battle. So, yeah.
Well, if you think about it, if you do start with the creature battle, you know, it's rescue, it's failed rescue towards closer to a rescue to final rescue. Really, like each rescue kind of builds on itself. You know, Anakin and Padme's attempt fails. Mace Windu's attempt is initially successful, but it's about to fail. And then Yoda shows
up.
Right. And then Yoda shows up with the clone army and they're successful finally in the rescue. It takes three tries.
Right. Right. Third time's the charm.
Yeah.
Obi-Wan, you're such a pain to have to rescue.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't have a lot else to say other than R2 also performs a rescue in this scene. He rescues 3PO's head and puts it back on his body. So I have to mention that R2 was in there. Yes, even R2 gets in on this rescue operation.
I'm quite beside myself.
Now what are you taking me? Oh, this is such a drag. I am quite beside myself. I love it. So, but yes.
Did you hear that ridiculous pun?
Sure, people are getting annoyed with that by now, but I don't care.
Yeah, I know. Don't listen to the Wampa's lyric because it's basically just the Foden Bead show, and it sucks.
Right. Aww.
All right. But yeah, I don't have much else to say because I just love the scene, and it's one of my favorite sequences in all of Star Wars. So, that's...
It's pretty darn epic.
I don't have anything else to say.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think some of these rescue scenes that we've been talking about are just, they just all have like their own degree of epicness, you know?
Right.
Some are more personal ones, you know, like Leia rescuing Han or Luke. And then there's some of these are the bigger picture ones, like an Attack of the Clones or the Resistance showing up on Takodana, right? And I think, and again, like just a quick side note, like, the perfection of John Williams' music for these rescue scenes, or Michael Giacchino's in the Rogue One moment. But when they're personal rescues, the music is a little bit more personal sounding, whereas these big bombastic ones, right? Like we get these really big sounding trumpets and horns of like, here comes the Legion of Doom, you know, well, the Legion of Kick-Ass, I guess. And so really cool how the music itself will mirror the type of rescue it is.
Right.
So, yeah. No, but you know, we definitely want to hear, like, when we post this episode, we really encourage you guys, you know, via social media to share some of your favorite rescue scenes, because I'm sure we missed some of yours. You know, so definitely feel free to comment and share some of your own favorite rescue scenes, after you're done or while you're listening to the episode.
Right. Exactly. There's so many rescue scenes, and, you know, everybody's got their own favorites. So I'm curious to see what people want to say about their favorite rescue scenes. So
absolutely.
Maybe we should do a poll about that someday.
Yeah, that's a good idea, but still feel free to comment. No.
But yes, please comment and tell us. So
yeah,
it'll be a while before we ever get to that poll if we do it. So if we remember to do it.
Yeah. That's the bigger pick. Yeah. So anyway, there you have it. You know, those are our rescue moments. We hope you enjoyed them. But as we promised at the top of the show, we want to get back to a few of these Rogue One reaction comments. We got so many from you guys. And we want to get back and try to get a couple more of those out of here before we finish this episode. So the first one we're going to look at right now is from Red Kenobi, who sent us an email with some great insight into Rogue One. So, Jason, what does Red Kenobi have to say?
All right. Red Kenobi says, "Hi, guys. As always, great podcast. I like the positivity you guys show always, especially Jason." Oh, well, thank you. Overall, great movie. Some points I wanted your thoughts. Number one, I really liked Aaron Gowen's tweet that Rogue One and Episode 4 would be a great and complete duology. I mean, I'd agree. You know, I can safely say I'm not the only one who walked out of that theater going, "I should go put A New Hope in right now."
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
I finally had the opportunity to do that. One of the days I saw it in the afternoon. I came home and put on A New Hope, and it was really cool. Like, you go from the Tanafor fleeing, you know, Vader's and his Devastator. Uh-huh. And you open it with it, you know, being subdued by said Devastator, you know. So it is. Oh, it does work really well together visually. Audio-wise, it's quite jarring, though. And I say that because, again, the music at the end of Rogue One is so, like, tragically beautiful and much more modern-esque type music than kind of this old music of John Williams in A New Hope. So,
okay.
But yeah,
although there are strains from the A New Hope soundtrack in, you know, in the closing moments of that movie.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that does tie in well. But even that, you can tell how different those types of the sounds of the music is. But yeah, they definitely story wise work very well together.
Cool. Red Kenobi continues. Number two, as far as CGI Tarkin, I thought it was a good, bold move. Lucas-esque. I see three options they had: A, recast an actor; B, CGI; or C, change the story to need him less. I think they made the right choice. With Star Wars fans, A or B wouldn't satisfy everyone. People will always complain. And Gareth Edwards says Lucas really liked the film. I can definitely see that for this reason and others. So, but yeah, I agree. The CGI Tarkin was a stroke of brilliance. To use something like that, and not only to use something like that, but to pull it off so well. I haven't spoken to anybody specifically about this, but I've heard people say that people they've talked to were just like, you know, oh, well, you can always tell when it's this person is CGI. It's not as good as, you know, someone actually being there. And somebody will say, oh, yeah, well, Leia didn't look quite right, but Tarkin was amazing. Oh, Tarkin was CGI? So, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you get things like that. And I think it is, you know, a very Lucas-esque move. And apparently, I can't remember where I heard this, but Lucas apparently sometime in the past had talked about, you know, using computer animation to bring back long dead actors, you know, and we'd have new movies with people like, I forget who he said, but, you know, now all the, you know, Charlton Heston or something like that, you know. So apparently this is an idea that
the Lucas Ten Commandments toyed around. Too.
right. So apparently this is an idea that George Lucas has toyed around with before. So the fact that they pulled it off in a Star Wars movie And for Rogue One, with such a beloved character like Tarkin, I think was great.
Yeah. No, it's interesting you bring that up because I'm just about finished reading the new George Lucas biography by Brian J. Jones. It's called George Lucas: A Life. It's absolutely incredible.
I've just started that.
Yeah, it's so good. I'll tell you right now, it starts better than it ends. Sorry, spoiler alert. He really rushes things towards the end. The beginning is so awesome. When you're finished, maybe we could do an episode on this just because it's really good.
Okay.
You'll get to this later in the book, but George does talk about this early on and during when he starts with digital technology right before the prequels about how he would love to someday be able to bring back, you know, deceased actors and bring them into modern films through, you know, CGI enhancements and CGI, you know, meddling. That is something, and that book came out before Rogue One came out. So, we know that it's not something he said in spite of Rogue One. I mean, it was something he was literally talking about back in like 98, 99. Red Kenobi is 100% on with like it being Lucas-esque. And, you know, I think Steve made a great point on the last episode of, you know, for some people, this is why Rogue One felt more Star Wars-y than Force Awakens, because it really pushed some things, you know, as far as filmmaking goes. You know, Force Awakens didn't do anything new, and that's not belittling it. It looks great, but it didn't do anything to push the limits. Rogue One did, and that's a huge George Lucas thing. I mean, that's exactly what he did with each of the prequels. That's what he did with each of the originals. Mm-hmm. Force Awakens just chose not to do that. And there's probably plenty of reasons as to why, right? Like they're rekindling the old spark. That was the purpose and goal of Force Awakens, and it succeeds.
Right.
But Rogue One had the ability to then like push a little bit. Now, granted, Rogue One's not the first movie to do this. I really do. I think the first one was Terminator Salvation, where they, you know, CGI'd young Arnold's face.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm really glad that they did that, and I think it looks great and it works perfectly. I get why people are saying Leia's isn't 100%. I don't care though. Like, it still looks really good. It doesn't, you know, for these people who are like, oh, it immediately took me out of the story. It's like, well, for starters, like, you're pathetic.
Then you weren't invested in the story.
Exactly. Like, if you can't suspend disbelief long enough for something that small, like you're doing it wrong, in my opinion, you know, and I don't mean that to sound so harsh and rude, but you know, yes, Leia's not perfect, and some people don't even think Tarkin is. I think Tarkin is perfect. I didn't even know it was a CGI effect until after the movie, and that's like you were making the point. Neither did a lot of people.
Right.
And even though Leia's isn't perfect, it is so damn good that I don't care. Like, it really enhanced the story as opposed to take away from it, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah, maybe the nose is a bit off, but the fact that we have her there looking at the camera and saying a line or two is amazing, you know?
Yeah,
give us that, folks.
Right, right.
And then Ray Kenobi has one more point that he wants to get. Number three, as far as comparing to The Force Awakens, for me, this jury is still out on The Force Awakens until the trilogy is complete. I agree with you on that. I still have mixed feelings that won't be resolved till then. Rogue One is a standalone, so I think it's easier to judge alone. I think they did an excellent job and fulfilled the two main purposes, A, enhance New Hope, and B, be bold and risky in a good way, such as killing everyone off, pushing technology, Shades of Grey and the Rebellion, etc. Thanks, guys. Peace. And we actually had a good conversation with Steve about this very topic last episode. So,
yeah. Right. So just listen to the last episode. Now let's move on. No, I'm kidding. I think he's absolutely right about, you know, kind of the verdict of Force Awakens will somewhat stand dependent on even just episode 8. You don't even need necessarily the full trilogy. I actually watched this video that somebody posted online yesterday where it talks about, Force Awakens is not a remake of A New Hope. And it actually breaks it down it's a conglomeration of the original trilogy. Like the first part is from A New Hope. And then there's the middle act, which actually is really similar to Empire's middle act. And then the last part is really similar to Return of the Jedi's final act. So it's, and they said, you know, kind of the purpose of it was to remind us of that nostalgia feeling that we felt for the original trilogy, hook us back in. And if you think about it, the scene at the very end, almost like the epilogue, if you will, which is Rey going to finally find Luke. That scene, if you think about it, really is a distinctly different scene and feeling than the rest of that movie.
It is.
It's a whole new feeling. And it I is. Think, and then that video makes the point of like, now they are free in 8 and 9 to go wherever.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, if you can be harsh still and say, well, Force Awakens didn't have to do that, right? Like, it's not required to do that. Certainly George didn't do that with Episode 1. I mean, it was a totally new feeling from the first moment.
Right.
But be that as it may, you know, yes, I think the jury is still out on Force Awakens. And like I've said numerous times, I don't want to say, again, like, too much about how much I love Rogue One, because I did the same thing last year with Force Awakens, and that certainly has mellowed, you know, and it, like we talked about in the last two episodes ago, where we kind of rank the films where they stand right now. You know, it's clear that Force Awakens has fallen to the bottom half of my list, whereas Rogue One's right towards the top. That may change again in a year's time, but still, like, right now, I think Rogue One is just so perfect in a way that Force Awakens wasn't for me. And granted, you know, Red Kenobi's making that great point. Force Awakens is the first part of a trilogy. Rogue One is a standalone. So, of course, it's easier to judge it on its own.
Right.
Yeah, you know, the comparisons were bound to happen because, again, they were both released in the same, like, within a year of each other. So that's right. Going to happen. But they're both great films, and they're both very different films. And I think, you know, whichever one you prefer is totally subjective.
Exactly. So, all right. Well, we've got one more we want to get through.
Patrick's. Yeah. So we got another, I think, was this an email that he sent?
Yes, this was an email.
All right. I'm going to let you read it just because my glasses are downstairs and I really can't see my screen that well. So why don't you just start reading this one too?
Okay.
This comes from Pat Patrick, which I think you did say.
Patrick. He says, "Dear Carl and Jason, I loved Rogue One. I went to the 7 o'clock showing on Thursday. Let's get this review started. Let's start with the things I did not like. I would have liked to see more of Baze, Bodhi, Krennic, and Saw. The only other thing I did not like was that it was too fast and too slow at different points." So those are his negative takeaways. Yeah. He didn't get to see enough of certain characters, and it was too fast sometimes and too slow at other times.
Yeah, and I think that pacing has been brought up by a lot of folks about how, you know, Rogue One does seem to be off a bit on the pacing. And I felt that the first time I saw it. So Greg and I went and saw it just a few days ago, well, like a week ago on Friday. And we went to the official IMAX 3D theater here in Boston. It's like the legit IMAX theater, and it was amazing. The first thing that I just remember was you could see every little rain droplet on Krennic's tunic on at the beginning of that film. It's just, oh my God, the picture was amazing. But I was kind of tired when we went to see it because I had barely slept the night before. And I just remember, like, I do remember dozing a little bit, mainly just because, again, I was just physically tired. But the pacing is a little bit, like, it's really fast, and then it kind of slows down, and then it's really fast and relentless by the end. But, yeah, I definitely see those quibbles about the pacing. But I think overall they're fun. It works really well.
Oh, yeah. Now, the rest of the email is, you know, things he likes. He says, "There are not enough good things to say about this movie, and it can't say anything that has not been said about this movie. I loved the characters, and the Empire felt terrifying. I loved all the Easter eggs." And then he starts going into some of those. Some of the lesser ones I found were a Stormtrooper commando, Black Scout Trooper helmet, being borne by one of Saw's troops. The next two are not confirmed for all I know, but might be true. The first is not really an Easter egg, but I thought I saw Twi'lek in Saw's group. Yes, you did. I forget his name, but he is a cousin of Bib Fortuna, according to the visual guide, and was part of Cham Syndulla's resistance on Ryloth.
That's
so
cool.
The second is the transport Jin is in when she's going to the prison camp, and it looks a lot like that clone turbo tank, because it is. That's awesome. And nobody else, like none of the other articles I've been reading online have mentioned that tank. You know, when they're talking about the Easter eggs, it's, you know, the Juggernaut turbo tank is, you know, right there in Revenge of the Sith. He also says, "I loved how they showed that the Rebel Alliance had to do some questionable things to win. It makes it more warlike." And, do you want to jump in here before we continue on any of these points?
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely right about the Easter eggs, you know, the, and that it's nice to hear you confirm it, because I didn't know for sure that that was the Clone Wars tank, because that's what I thought every time I see that movie. I'm like, oh my gosh, that looks so much like a Clone Wars tank, which I thought was cool just visually, like that they're giving us that connection to the prequels. But apparently it is that.
Yeah, it's basically,
do they just repurpose it?
They repurposed it because it's, you know, the Outer Rim prison camp, and they need something to transport the prisoners around. Hey, there's that old, you know, Juggernaut, you know, Clone Wars turbo tank in storage that nobody else is using. That's got enough space for some prisoners, right? You know?
Yeah. Yep, yep. And, his point about, the questionable things we see the Alliance doing, Joe, when we had Joe and Greg on a couple episodes ago to talk about it, you know, Joe made that great point. You know, that was something he loved so much, was how gray the certain parts of the Alliance are and how important that is, because even though they are the good guys, occasionally they have to do some not so great things to win the day. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it definitely, and I think that makes it somewhat distinct for Star Wars too, because Star Wars, it's always been very clear who the good guys and the bad guys are. This is the first time ever where we've gotten that gray area of, now granted, you know, in the original trilogy, Darth Vader is the epitome of evil who becomes a human and a sympathetic character. But other than that, it's very clear who the good and the bad guys are. In Rogue One, it's still clear who the good guys and the bad guys are, but what's shocking is that the good guys do some not so good things.
Right. Right. He has a couple of other small points here to wrap this up. He says, Vader was so awesome. It was cool to see Mustafar too. Yes. Yes, it was. and then he gives us his new ranking for the Star Wars saga. Number one, Empire Strikes Back. Two, Revenge of the Sith. Three, Rogue One. Four, Return of the Jedi. Five, Force Awakens. Six, A New Hope. Seven, The Phantom Menace. And eight, Attack of the Clones. Thanks for helping with the build, and I can't wait for the Rogue One episodes to come out and for Episode 8.
real quick, just to touch on the Mustafar point, we've talked plenty about Vader. Absolutely incredible to see Mustafar and to see Vader's castle from that old Ralph McQuarrie sketch. You know, and it's so similar to what McQuarrie envisioned, and Lucas always wanted to put it in, but just never found the reason to do it. So perfectly does it fit in this film. And, you know, every time I see Mustafar too, I commented on this to Greg last time we saw, again, seeing it in that really legit IMAX 3D, you could see all the little details of the interior of Vader's castle when Krennic is waiting for him. It immediately made me feel like we were at the power station from Revenge of the Sith. Like, and I liked that, because it's like, this movie really does, while it's very clearly into the OT timeline, it really has some points that are anchored in the prequels, which I love, because again, with Force Awakens, you know, it was like they were doing everything they could to distance themselves from that, you know. And as much as I love JJ has been somewhat open about how crappy he thinks the prequels are, but hey, JJ, like, as much as I love you, buddy, you didn't have too many original ideas for Force Awakens. At least George took some risks. I love JJ and I do love Force Awakens, but you know, the prequels took a lot more risks than the Force Awakens did. You could just say even Phantom Menace did. So you don't have to even say the prequels at large. But anyway, so good seeing Mustafar. And every time I see that scene, it makes me just want to watch Revenge of the Sith, because I feel like the amount of like sorrow Darth Vader must feel, that Anakin must feel, like, you know, to be stuck. This is where his castle is. This is where the Emperor, like you've told us, you know, they confirm this in the visual guide, where the Emperor has made him set up shop is the place of his failure, in a sense. And you know, it makes me really feel for Vader, even though that scene is, it's not really about Vader. It's more about Krennic. Oh man, I just feel like this sense of sorrow that must hang over that castle.
Yeah, and I just gotta say one thing. I've seen some criticism again online of Vader's, you know, try not, you know, be careful you don't choke on your aspirations, director. That line, and like, no, that's a total Vader line.
Yes, it is.
Apology accepted, Captain Nita. You know.
Yep. Yeah.
I hope so, Commander, for your sake. The Emperor is not as forgiving as I am.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is bad because Vader's not forgiving at all.
Well, even even his line in A New Hope, "I find your lack of faith disturbing." Mm-hmm. Right? Like, that's, those are like quips, like, don't choke on your aspirations. I love that line. I think it works really
it's
well.
It's a great line. It's you know, it's a burn sort of line the way that it's done, but I love it. It's great, and it's totally Vader. So,
yes, anyway. It is.
All right. So there's a couple more of your Rogue One responses. We just are looking for any excuse to keep talking about this movie. And while we have been recording, I have just confirmed with Kyle Baca that I'm going to go see it again tonight.
Splendid.
So, yes. It'll be number 5 for me. It's been a couple weeks, too, so I'm really excited.
I'm at 8, Jason.
I know.
But yeah, anyway, maybe one more will probably be all that I'll do. I might get up to 9. I did 11 with Force Awakens, but I don't plan on getting there with Rogue One. Rogue One is a lot heavier, too, in my opinion, than Force Awakens.
It is. It is. You can't just go see it repeatedly, you know.
Yeah.
You need a bit of an emotional recovery period.
Right.
Where you go see it again.
Yeah. But
anyway.
Well, I think that about wraps this one up for us. You know, again, we have just literally two left, two more responses from you guys that we will we'll either tack on to the end of our next episode or certainly the week after, because next week's episode, we are going to be talking all music. So this is not our attempt to be David W. Collins from Oxygen, because we don't have that musical wherewithal to bring that level of depth to it. But we still want to talk music, and yes. I want to talk more in depth about Rogue One music. I absolutely love it. But we also realized that we've never really specifically talked The Force Awakens soundtrack either. While certainly we brought it up, we never really specifically looked at it. So next episode, we are going to look at our top 3 tracks from both Force Awakens and Rogue One. So Jason and I, and we most likely will be having a special guest on the next episode, but I'm not going to say who it is in case things don't work out, but, hopefully they will.
Right.
But we are going to be just talking about our favorite 3 songs from the Force Awakens soundtrack and then the Rogue One soundtrack, which we think will be a lot of fun. And of course, we invite you to share some of your favorite pieces as well. Jason, before we wrap this up, you want to remind folks of what our matchup is coming up?
Yes, yes. And I'm really excited about this. We're doing another team-up matchup here. Of course, the teams are going to be Chirrut and Baze versus Pre Vizsla and Bo-Katan. So I'm super excited about this. The Rogue One duo versus some Mandalorians. And I'm really curious to see what people want to say about that. So, yes, look forward to that. And Carl, if they want to weigh in on that response, comment on their favorite rescue scenes or their favorite music from Force Awakens and Rogue One. Where can they do that?
Glad you asked, Jason. they can do it on Facebook, facebook.com/wampaslairpodcast. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/wampaslair. Shoot us an email at wampaslairpodcast@gmail.com. And again, if you are able, please feel free to go over to our Patreon page to offer your support on our Patreon account, which is patreon.com/wampaslairpodcast.
Yes, and you'll be hearing this music next episode, I'm sure. anything else, Carl, before we wrap this up?
I think that's going to do it for me.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Wampa's Lair Podcast. This has been episode number 216, Top 5 Rescue Scenes. For Carl, I'm Jason, and we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.